The former US Democrat Vice President Al Gore is in Australia at the moment, and he's congratulating our country for holding firm on the Paris Agreement at last week's G20 talks in Germany. Al Gore, who spent the last 10 years campaigning on climate change, says he was, quote, very impressed by the commitment to the issue shown by both sides of politics. But he did warn the climate debate and American democracy have been hacked, that's his word, by big money, lobbyists and special interests, and that a bipartisan approach is the only way to keep the influence of big money out of politics. So Al Gore is here at the moment to launch his new movie, which is called An Inconvenient Sequel. He's speaking here with Greg Borschmann.
Mr. Gore, thank you for speaking to RN Breakfast.
Thank you.
You've been telling this story, or versions of it, for more than 25 years. It's probably made you angry, but has climate change ever made you weep, made you cry?
No, I don't remember crying about it. I remember times in the past when I was tempted to despair, but I never let that get to me. You know, there's an economist who is now deceased who once said, his name was Rudy Dornbusch, he said, things take longer to happen than you think they will, and then they happen much faster than you thought they could. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've seen as a pattern that's unfolding with solutions to the climate crisis. There were times when I thought it was going way too slowly, and that did raise a lot of concerns. But now I'm very excited because we now have the solutions to the climate crisis, and they're cost-effective, and they make the world better, and they're spreading rapidly.
One of the reasons I ask you that question is because there's a scene in that movie from the Senate in March 2007. You're being remorselessly grilled by senior senator, Senate Republican Jim Inhofe. Mm. And when another senator intervened on your behalf to ask that you be given a chance to reply, you stop and express what seemed like an almost impossible dream that if only the lights and cameras could be turned off and you could have a private moment with Senator Inhofe to both talk honestly about what's really happening to planet Earth. You appear to be almost crying.
Well, I wasn't crying. It was a sincere expression designed to form a human connection with him. I've seen that happen. It didn't turn out to happen in that case.
Of course, Senator Inhofe was the leader of the 22 Republicans who wrote to Donald Trump earlier this year urging the new president to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. And after decades of treading water or even going backwards as emissions continue to rise, isn't that confirmation that politics, contested politics, is never going to fix the problem?
No, I don't agree with that. I see why you put it that way. And I will confess to you that when Donald Trump made his announcement that he was going to withdraw the U.S. from the Paris Agreement, I was fearful that other countries might follow his lead. But exactly the opposite has happened. The entire rest of the world has held firm and even redoubled its commitment to keep the Paris Agreement. And in my country, the governors of states and the mayors of cities and the leaders of businesses have stepped forward and said, if Donald Trump is doing less, we're going to do more. And it now looks as if the U.S. will meet or exceed its commitment under the Paris Agreement, regardless of Donald Trump.
The power of the grassroots. If politics is going to struggle with this problem, what about fear? Because one of the most compelling moments in your new film is as you speak to a survivor of Super Typhoon Haiyan, which hit the Philippines in late 2013, that man telling you how frightened he was, years later, that emotion was still overwhelming him.
Yeah. Well, many people who've been through a traumatic experience will tell you how it lingers with them, and the subtlest reminder can bring that fear back. I have found that hope is a more powerful motivator than fear. And one of the big changes over the last decade has been that we now have the solutions to the climate crisis, and the hope is justified. The renewable energy revolution is spreading rapidly. We now see solar and wind and batteries and efficiency coming down so rapidly in cost. It's almost like computer chips and mobile phones and flat screen TVs. They get cheaper and better at the same time. And now in much of the world, electricity from solar and wind is cheaper than electricity from coal or gas, and the cost continues to come down. So the economic reality is driving the solutions forward now.
You've been at many big global conferences, environment conferences and climate conferences since 1992, the Rio Earth Summit. Let's look at Paris for a moment, because Paris committed the world to being carbon neutral by 2050 or soon thereafter. But at the same time, there will be another 1.5 billion passengers on the planet. Is that the crux of the problem? All of them wanting to be rich like we've become in the West, producing more than our fair share of pollution. Today is World Population Day. So is action on climate change doomed if it does not also deal with a booming global population?
Well, it's a thoughtful question. And of course, the fact that we have quadrupled human population in less than a century, and the fact that the population continues to increase, is certainly a part of the underlying cause of this collision between human civilization and the ecological system of the Earth. But even though it doesn't always seem so, the population explosion is a success story unfolding in slow motion. We are seeing the slowing down of population increases. And the key is educating girls, empowering women to take part in decisions, and making fertility management available. Every nation in the world is in the midst of a shift towards smaller families, lower death rates, and lower birth rates. It's pretty obvious now that we're going to stabilize population somewhere between 9 and 11 billion. And yes, that'll mean a good many more mouths to feed. But if we continue to make our economy way more efficient with less carbon emissions and less pollution, we'll do fine.
There's plenty of talk amongst scientists about a tipping point. You mention it in a political sense in your movie, that if we haven't already passed it, coming decades will lock in literally centuries of potentially catastrophic climate change, catastrophic for humans. What's the plan B?
Well, there is no plan B because there's no planet B. I'm all for exploring space and exploring Mars, but it's a fantasy to think that we're going to move to some other planet and live in hermetically sealed buildings and not be able to go outside without special suits. This is our home, and we have to defend it. There are some tipping points in the environment that we have to avoid. For example, if the Arctic were to heat up too much, that could release the CO2 and methane stored in the frozen Arctic soils, and it could become a runaway problem. But the vast majority of scientists say that we still have time to avoid the most catastrophic kinds of climate change. I have a farm myself. I know that many of your listeners live in rural areas, and what I see among my neighbors is a recognition that some of the old ways of crop rotation and not cutting out all the trees that are around in pastures, and some of the other changes that people are making in organic approaches, actually can make money and also avoid the consequences that we've had to deal with.
Some of those are technical solutions. I'd like to just drill down with you a moment more with the other side of the technical solution that is being proposed. If you were president now, would you be backing the US Defense Department or corporate players investigating these technologies? We know that research and investment is already underway for geoengineering, in some ways splitting the scientific community. Would you ask for that work to be stopped because of the risk that it's only likely to make a bad problem worse?
Well, research is fine, but these proposed experiments, some of them, I don't know if you use the word cockamamie here, crazy schemes.
Aerosols into the atmosphere, iron filings
into the ocean.
Yeah, they started
with a proposal to orbit tinfoil strips around the planet to deflect the sunlight that's causing warming. Now they want to put chalk dust up and messing around with the way God made this earth and blocking out the sunlight is nuts. Somebody once told me, a scientist, he said, if you have a lifeboat way offshore and a couple of men go to one side and start rocking the boat violently, you're not going to try to signal to shore with a mirror to tell them how to build a wave-generating machine that's going to cancel out the rocking. You're going to get them to stop rocking the boat. Today, the world will put another 110 million tons of CO2 into the Earth's atmosphere, and some of it will stay there 1,000 years from now. So we need to stop doing that. And the good news is we can.
Australian greenhouse gas emissions are on the rise. Australia has no price on carbon, and there's internal dispute within government about an effective policy to deliver emissions reductions. Is Australia a climate laggard?
Well, Australia held firm last week at the G20 meeting of the 20 largest nations in Germany. Australia has signed up to the Paris Agreement. Australia is on course to meet their commitments under the Paris Agreement. And I don't want to get involved in your politics or internal debates, but I'm very impressed that the vast majority of Australians in both parties want to solve the climate crisis and realize that now we can do it and save money in the process.
Mr. Gore, one final reflection from you. You say climate change has produced a democracy crisis. Our democracy has been hacked. By whom and what's the fix? Because presumably it can never be Democrats or even Republicans flying solo. It has to be a fully committed bipartisan war cabinet, doesn't it?
Yeah, it needs to be bipartisan. In my country, I have seen democracy hacked by big money and lobbyists and special interests. And I think the solution is to get the influence of big money out of politics. There's a scene in the movie, An Inconvenient Sequel, that involves my meeting with a conservative Republican mayor of a city in Texas in the heart of oil country. And he's gone to 100% renewable energy. Why? Well, he's a certified public accountant, and he's run the numbers, and he's saving his people money by going to renewable energy. And I think the new economic attractiveness of solar and wind and batteries and efficiency is really driving the whole system in the right direction now.
Mr. Gore, thank you for talking to RN Breakfast.
Thank you for having me.
Former US Vice President Al Gore speaking with Greg Borschmann about his new film, An Inconvenient Sequel. And 10 years ago, his first film, An Inconvenient Truth, won 2 Academy Awards and helped him earn a Nobel Peace Prize. You can find a longer version of that interview on our website.